This is Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk, and you can find out more at my website, allbook-books.com, and Substack, Musings from Between the Lines. Between the lines, because the lines don't always tell the truth, so you gotta look. At least I have to look between the lines, so I share that kind of perspective with people in the essays and poems that are posted there and in other ways, including this podcast, including here. So this is a partial book review because I'm only 36 pages into a 124 page book, but it's so good I wanted to talk about it, and it's so pertinent. It's Jonathan Crary, C-R-A-R-Y, Verso Books, Scorched Earth: Beyond the Digital Age to a Post-Capitalist World. And the back cover quotes: a passionate denunciation of the destructive character of capitalist technology, built on evidence drawn from every corner of the world. Scorched Earth is a major contribution to the reclaiming of our radical imagination. At last, a book about the urgency to find a way out from a system that has crossed a threshold of irreparability and toxicity. A book that is simultaneously desperate and refreshing. And inside jacket, the recent past has made it apparent that the networks and platforms of transnational corporations are intrinsically incompatible with a habitable Earth. So that part is not that new. What's new is that he's tying it into the whole digital age and the technology, because in short, all the mining and the, for example, the data centers, the electricity, 24/7 electricity, all the water that it takes to with the data centers, etc., is what feeds this otherwise seemingly seamless and facile to use system that many of people, especially in the northern hemisphere, certainly in the U.S., seem somewhat oblivious. Or what can you do about the fact that, for example, children are getting hurt or dying just to have cobalt for a cell phone? So it's I've called it the conundrum of our times. How do 8-something billion people deal with this? And the inside jacket: in this uncompromising essay, Jonathan Crary addresses the obvious but unsayable truth of our time. The digital age is the disastrous terminal stage of global capitalism, which manifests in ecocide, mass impoverishment, military terror, and the financialization of social life. I like that phrase, as far as trying to break it down and understand the financialization of social life. Some of that is, if you think about social media, it's run by the big corporations. They manage the big web browsers and the social media, and if you pay your bill to get online, you're paying some big corporation. Yet, as the book opened my eyes to, which is kind of already observable, but it gives the individual and many people this feeling of empowerment, or personal empowerment, the whole sense of entrepreneurship, which happens because I can do this and I can do that, which is true to a degree. You can do your own thing, which is great. But in this bigger picture that Crary is discussing, he talks about that kind of illusion of this individualness, empowered and kind of free to do whatever, is just that, an illusion, because of the mining and the side effects and the fact that the big corporations are, if not just producing the stuff, actually looking in on it. This polemic by the author of 24/7 dismantles the presumption that social media could ever be an instrument of radical change. Far from it. The recent past has made it apparent that the networks and platforms of transnational corporations are intrinsically incompatible with a habitable Earth or with the human interdependence needed to build egalitarian post-capitalist forms of life. So there are some points in here that I would, begin to beg to differ, but I have not read the whole thing. I would say that, yeah, they can be radical change, but then again, he cites that not so much. So it really depends on your frame of reference and also at what cost. I mean, I've heard, I think years ago, John Trudell was talking about the gadgets, which, you know, if you go to protest, then, you know, don't bring your cell phone because they can track you and get your ID. So the very thing that we think of as the form of freedom can be a trap. But then on the other hand, a lot of people are taking videos in real time and photos, which is helping to spread the word and the truth about various things. So it's the kind of argument, or one could argue these topics back and forth. I'm going to refrain from that because I haven't read the whole book. But it's one of those books where I'm underlining a lot and just like paragraphs, I'm highlighting a paragraph or so because it's just very insightful, very well written. It's one of those books where I feel like, you know, wow, it's really making me see things anew, which I love in a nonfiction book, is to see the world anew. The way he describes it, here's an example. The internet complex has become inseparable from the immense, incalculable scope of 24/7 capitalism and its frenzy of accumulation, extraction, circulation, production, transport, and construction on a global scale. Behaviors that are inimical to the possibility of a livable and just world are incited in almost every feature of online operations. Fueled by artificially manufactured appetites, the speed and ubiquity of digital networks maximize the incontestable priority of getting, having, coveting, resenting, envying, all of which furthers the deterioration of the world, a world operating without pause, without the possibility of renewal or recovery, choking on its heat and waste. The techno-modernist dream of the planet as a colossal worksite of innovation, invention, and material progress continues to attract defenders and apologists. Most of the many projects in industries of, quote, renewable energy are designed for perpetuating business as usual, for maintaining devastating patterns of consumption, competition, and heightened inequality. Market-driven schemes such as the Green New Deal are absurdly pointless because they do nothing to switch off the expansion of senseless economic activity, the needless uses of electric power, or the global industries of resource extraction incited by 24/7 capitalism. This book is aligned with the tradition of social pamphleteering that aims to give voice to what is experienced in common, to what is known or partly known in common but is neglected by an overpowering barrage of messages that insist on the unalterability of our administered lives. My goal here is not to present a nuanced theoretical analysis, but in a time of emergency, to affirm the truth of shared understandings and experiences and to insist that the forms of radical refusal rather than adaptation and resignation are not only possible but necessary. The internet complex functions as an unending announcement of its indispensability and of the insignificance of whatever life remains unassimilable to its protocols. Its omnipresence and embeddedness within almost every sphere of personal and institutional activity makes any notion of its impermanence or post-capitalist marginalization seem unthinkable. But this impression marks a collective failure of imagination in its passive acceptance of numbing online routines as synonymous with living. It is unthinkable only to the extent that our desires and our bonds with other peoples and species have been wounded and incapacitated. The internet complex quickly became an integral part of neoliberal austerity and its ongoing erosion of civil society and its replacement by monetized online simulations of social relations. It fosters the belief that we no longer depend on each other, that we are autonomous administrators of our lives, that we can manage our friends in the same way we manage all our online accounts. It also heightens what social theorist Elena Pulcini calls the narcissistic apathy of individuals emptied of desire for community and who live in passive conformity with the existing social order. And he does speak to what is getting lost in this shift of society and global focus or emphasis, the 24/7. And with What's Missing, he speaks to the indigenous perspective. Here's a bit. For Philippe Descola, the idea of categorical separation between nature and humanity gained acceptance in early modern Europe and was reinforced by a belief in, quote, a universal human tendency to overcome natural constraints and instinctive forces, end quote. Thus, social customs and behaviors that derive from an interlacing of the human with animals, insects, plants, forests, rivers were eliminated or marginalized. A life world whose social rhythms were originally shaped by the alteration of the seasons, phases of the moon, migration of birds, the oscillation of day and night, of sleep and waking, the sequence of festivals, nonetheless left its traces on the seemingly insignificant activities of everyday life. It was these endlessly variegated cycles that nourished and shaped communities and forms of association in pre-modern cultures, but by the middle of the 19th century, only fragments of their life world survived. During the 20th century, the tradition-based reservoirs of knowledge, moral conviction, and individual competence were effectively nullified in the developed world by an onslaught of rationalizing forces. At the same time, there was a pervasive acceptance, either celebratory or regretful, that a disenchanted world was the inevitable consequence of enlightenment and material progress. Now, however, it is inescapably evident that Western modernization and its disenchantment of the world has brought us to the edge of global catastrophe and extinction. The great heresy for the religions of techno-modernism and Western science is to affirm that the world is animate and that all living things are interconnected and interdependent. An animate world, as the etymology of the word suggests, is one that breathes, that unites everything in it with the rhythmic pulse of a world soul. So one of the things when he mentions the 24/7 capitalism, I realize, like, you know, I can personally choose, which I do, to have, you know, offline time. Okay, now it's time to nourish my off-the-grid consciousness and, you know, look out the window, go hug a tree type of thing. But nonetheless, I can make that choice, but still, there it is, available for the masses, for anybody, 24/7, and it's capitalistic-driven. Even though some good stuff happens in there. So that's one of the questions I have so far is without mandating less usage, how do we get it so it's not so dependent on all that stuff 24/7, even though it's there. And another fascinating thing with the 24/7, the constant motion of it is the ancient pictograph for the Tao Te Ching, the picture of Tao, is explained as going and pausing, like with feet walking on the path, going and pausing. Well, that's exactly what he says is what's missing in the modern world is the pausing. And that's what's missing with the technologic civilization, as John Trudell dubbed it. Fascinating tidbit here as far as sort of pseudo-synchronicity. He does highlight, too, how the environmental or the ecological or the energies, the awareness of caring for the earth have been overlooked, that even in a lot of the different movements, this and that, the environmental movement, this and that, what is overlooked is the bigger picture of earth consciousness. And here he writes, unfortunately, many on the left in the early 1970s regarded any attention to environmental issues as a diversion from the anti-war and liberation struggles of the time. The first Earth Day on April 20th, 1970, with its dubious institutional sponsorship, was rendered irrelevant several weeks later when student protesters were killed by National Guard and police at Kent State and Jackson State. That made me wonder if that was deliberate or not to squelch that movement. But there he mentions the ecological, enviro, Mother Earth. These are areas that obviously, again, the indigenous are bringing to the fore. It is time for that. And Carrary continues, the skepticism of activists was not without some justification, but more crucially, the radical left was unable to grasp how the Vietnam War manifested the biocide at the heart of Western imperialism. And by the 1980s, when some former leftists had morphed into postmodernists, post-structuralists, the patronizing disdain for anybody who talked about nature or environmentalism was all pervasive. So I see that, he mentions, as a key turning point in the 1980s, which is part of why we're here now. And some of the choice phrases I find so far, he mentions capitalist cannibalization of the planet, scorched earth capitalism, the internet complex. He points to the temporalities of the internet, like things that are trending and this and that. It's like it's hyped one day, next day, who remembers? And another psychological effect of the place, again, disconnected from relating with earth and local habitats, is the placelessness of the internet. Because, you know, you can have your laptop and be anywhere, your cell phone and be anywhere, and there's no specific like place associated with it, except for the data centers and the mining and all that stuff. Some of the positives he mentions are cooperatives, communities, scaling down the 24/7 energies and the natural rhythms. So that's where the positive of interrelationship, which is what the indigenous peoples have been living for hundreds, thousands, if not hundred thousands of years. That's it for part one of The Scorched Earth by Jonathan Crary. Thanks for listening. Be well.